Oh, hi, everybody. My name is Matt Storrs, and welcome to Matt's Planning. On today's episode, I have an expert on who I'm very excited to speak with. Expert, please introduce yourself and tell us what you're an expert in.
Hello, my name is Jack Simon Gray. I studied industrial design in college, so I like to say that my pronouns are they, them, chairs, and I'm an expert in chairs. I am a comedian who talks about furniture on and admittedly quite a bit off the stage, and I'm happy to be here with Matt to see what he knows about furniture.
Fantastic. I feel like I know quite a bit about furniture. I have had furniture most of my life. There has been a brief period where I was very adamant about not having any furniture, no chairs. I was a beanbag guy for a while.
Oh,
And
really?
yeah, I had to stop that because I got when you're selecting beanbags, it's not like a standard chair that would come in wood, plastic, or what have you. You have a set of coverings, and I opted for velvet. And so these velvet bean bags, pretty large, and a number of instances where people would stay over at my house thinking like, oh yeah, I'll just sleep on Matt's bean bags. And some people were in their early 20s, let's say that. And things got a little exciting for some people. And it turns out that velvet is not the easiest thing to clean. And that also goes to my knowledge of chairs as well. Ever since there's been humans, there have been chairs in some way. So for instance, the first chairs, as you may know, were just big sections of trees that fell down. And then somebody got the idea like, hey, if we use the rocks that we sometimes sit on, which are very uncomfortable most of the time, unless it's sandstone, then it can be nice and refreshing. We can cut into this tree and make it into something that is a little bit nicer to sit on and a little bit nicer to the eye, because many of these trees would start to decay. And so that kind of facilitated everybody talks about like the chairman of the board, but that actually was the first instance of a business, the very first business. A lot of people think that the oldest profession, it has something to do with sex work. It's not, it's actually chair making. And that's how we get the word chairman, because chairman was a chair maker who would always get to the top of business because everybody needed chairs. Because as we age and as we get older, people need something to sit on. That is a universal truth. That
this is something I can agree with. Yeah.
100%. And like you have concerts, and these concert venues are, music is one of the oldest things that humans have done, chair making and music. And the idea of having, oh, we'll have a slanted floor towards the stage, and that'll help with eye lines and everything like that. You know,
yeah.
ultimately, what people want are chairs, because if you have a good concert that's having a lot of fun, eventually you're going to get legs, they're going to get a little bit sore and everything like that. And then you can
Matt,
be, go ahead.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that you're giving me this long history of chairs. Where does IKEA come in all of this?
Fantastic. I'm glad you brought that up, because IKEA is very avant-garde when it comes to the chairs. Not only do they have the machines in every IKEA that are testing each chair. A lot of people don't know this, but every chair that's in one of those machines that where they have the fake butts sitting on it, like the hydraulic presses, those are the ones that are pretty, those are the floor models. And those are reinforced and those are very, very good.
Okay.
And so what they really want to do with IKEA is change people's perspective on what a chair can be. Because for the longest time, a chair wasn't a chair unless it had four legs. But now IKEA is like, well, what if
That's
it had...
correct, but yes, keep going.
So what if it had three legs? What if it had two legs? Or let's go back all the way to the beginning. And what if it had like a rounded bottom, not on like a tree trunk, and just one leg even? And people are admittedly hesitant to deal with that and to accept that. But I think that that is going to be ultimately something that really benefits society as we understand
chairs.
chairs, exactly,
Yeah. So
and what furniture can be.
I have another question.
Okay.
I don't know how much more time, but what impact did the Industrial Revolution have on chairs?
So that's an interesting point there, Jack. So basically, what happened in the Industrial Revolution is that they realized that there were a lot of people that were getting injured on the job, a lot of children that were working, and a lot of the children couldn't
That's true.
reach the machines to adequately put their hands in and fix them. And so what they did was they introduced chairs and chairs that the kids could stand on. And then eventually they're like, you know what? What if, like, when they get tired, they can sit down for the last 5 hours of their 15-hour shift, and then the productivity increased as astronomically. And then they realized, what if we mass produce chairs and we get chairs out to people and make it easy for anybody who wants to sit down to sit?
That's
So
like 20% correct. Yeah.
fantastic. Yeah, I was just about to ask about how much of that as a whole would you say was accurate?
Okay, I'll be honest. The chair, prehistoric chairs, sounds like you actually might have more knowledge on that topic than I do. I would say my chair knowledge starts maybe mid to late 19th century. So you might be correct. I feel like you might be incorrect, just respectfully, but happy to go and look up a few sources sometime. As for the rest of it, the IKEA bit. So weirdly, you were like 10% correct. The bit you said about the legs. So chairs have come in a number of different legs for whenever, however, but Nordic cultures were actually more likely to make chairs with three legs for whatever reason, and I believe German cultures as well. So you were on to something with the leg thing. I thought that was actually
Interesting.
pretty cool. Yeah. And finally, the Industrial Revolution. I don't think people sat down much in factories. Unfortunately, again, this might be an area where more than me when it comes to did they give the children who are putting their hands in the machines chairs? Unknown. But the idea that we were going to use factories to produce as many chairs as possible and that for everyone to have chairs, that is actually very true. I would say you're about 20%, 20 to 30% correct on that. Overall, I'd give you a failing grade, but I think that I was surprised by what you were able to come up with.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I've grown accustomed to getting a failing grade on my assessments. Yeah, what got you interested in chairs?
So, well, we're going to take a few steps back. At one point in my life, I thought I was going to become a scientist, and then I realized that was horribly boring, and never again will I try to be in a lab. I decided to go be a designer, and I thought I was going to be a graphic designer, and then I realized that's also horribly boring, and you stare at a computer all day. So, I decided to go do industrial design because I liked the idea. This is when I was applying for schools, trying to get into college. I was a pretty like good at math and science. I was okay at art, and so industrial design was a natural fit for me. And I don't know if you want to explain industrial design to me or if I should just explain what it is.
Yeah, I mean, if you could give an insight, I may talk to an industrial designer later, and so that'll be
Cool.
helpful.
Great. So, industrial design, the way I look at it, it's the design of anything smaller than a house. Architects do buildings, graphic designers do posters and other 2D media. Industrial designers do the 3D. So, if you have ever had a TV where you can't figure out where the power button is because it's that well hidden, that's an industrial designer's fault. Again, same goes for when you have a flashlight with only one button and it does like eight things, but you just have to know what order to press the button in. That's probably an industrial designer's fault also. It's not engineering quite, although we do work with engineers to, make our crazy designs work. Famously, it's that the designer comes up with something crazy and then the engineer has to make it happen, which is a great source of friction in the field. But overall, industrial design is just the design of things. And so while I was in school, I took this fantastic, and I was required to, this fantastic history course on industrial design, which if you ever have a chance to just take a history class on the things that surround us, it's very cool. Because what I like about it is that his that you can learn about wars or even like social history, but it doesn't quite have the same level of impact as your professor standing in front of you talking about a chair, and then he'll flash forward to a slide on his PowerPoint where he shows that chair in, say, Batman, like a Batman movie, and then he explains to you, hey, they use this chair in this movie to communicate these things because of the history of that chair. Like, that's
Interesting.
very cool. As an example, since I pulled up Batman in the movie, I think is it The Dark Knight, Batman famously shuts the Joker in an interrogation room by barring the door with a very specific chair. That chair is something I would call design famous, where there's been a lot of furniture that's been produced, but there are very notable pieces in design history that like shaped the course of history. So if you look up the scene where Batman shuts the door, him and Joker into the room with the door with this chair, that chair is actually something called the Navy chair. And that is a chair that was asked for by the United States Navy. They put out a call and I believe the geez, 1900s. I don't have my slide deck in front of me, and I should have done that. But for just a famous for what they wanted was a chair that was basically indestructible. It needed to be fireproof, waterproof, and strong enough to survive a torpedo blast,
Oh,
which I
wow.
love. Yeah, exactly, because humans are not fireproof, waterproof, or strong enough to survive a torpedo blast. But we needed the chairs to be able to do that. So this man,
Well,
by
that's
really,
where, yeah, I mean, that's
yeah.
where they store all of the most important microfilm and fiche in the chairs,
In
if
the
I,
chairs,
right.
obviously. Yes, that's why we're doing this, obviously. So, anyways, a man by the name of Wilton C. Dingus, he was an engineer, more than a designer, but he made a really cool chair and he tossed it out the 8th story window of the building where they were having this chair selection process. And the Navy was like, yes, we want this chair. So, it's one of the stronger chairs out there and is a lovely, it's not even irony. There's an obvious reason why Batman would use that chair to stop the door. It also, because it's used in the Navy as like their chair, has a lot of like cultural, even if you don't know the chair, it's heavily associated with like military. So when you can use that in film to denote that something military or harsh is happening in scene. So yeah, so I guess this is kind of rounding around to like what it is I like about furniture and why I think everyone should know. I started telling jokes on stage with chairs. I'm going to say for this conversation, for anyone listening, feel free to look up these chairs because I cannot make this appear in your brain. But I just think it's very, very cool that I can talk about, hey, here's this piece. Like one of my favorite pieces is something called the Barcelona chair. It was designed for the Barcelona World's Fair in 1929 by Mies van der Rohe and Lili Reich. And that's a piece that if a movie wants to show, like, especially like a law office setup or a upscale setup, they use these chairs, for example, in, I believe, an American Psycho. Is it Norman Bates, right? That's the main character. It's in his house.
In Psycho is Norman Bates.
Norman Bates, sorry, what's American Psycho? What was the name of the
That's
American
Christian
Psycho?
Bale's character.
Christian Bale's character. His house is full of, it has the Barcelona pieces in it, Barcelona chair pieces in it. And it's usually used to convey upscale. And so once you know these pieces, you start seeing them everywhere in the world. You see them in media, you see them in movies. And I think it's just really neat. And I love doing getting up and doing comedy performances with this because it's both edu it's educational, it's distinctly edutainment, but it hits that perfect little like trivia like satisfaction where like you don't need to know the name of the chair that's at the end of the film, 500 Days of Summer. When the main character is falling in love, sorry, spoilers, with a new woman named Autumn. So, but it's kind of like a fun little tidbit that could be very fun.
With that chair at the end of that movie, does that chair, what does that chair convey?
So again, this is actually a Barcelona chair.
Oh, okay.
Again,
Interesting.
so it was conveying architect office. It was conveying yet again a little bit of a septic space. The tones in this scene are much warmer than, say, the American Psycho scene.
Right.
But it, yet again, trying to upscale. In this case, this chair was being used to communicate very clearly, like modernist architecture, which was kind of representative of the character's turn to going back to being an architect at the end of the film. So yeah, cool. I can talk a little bit about, so that's one cool thing. That's why it matters to know a thing or two about chairs, is that it's just a delightful little trivia fact. The other angle I actually find fascinating about furniture, and it's something I can't stop thinking about, is the reason why I was asking you questions about the Industrial Revolution is that there seems to me to be like a parallel between the Industrial Revolution and furniture and AI and AR art now. Yes, wildly fascinating. So I'm going to say these are Jack opinions. I did not get these from a classroom. This just comes from me thinking a lot about furniture and the observations that I know. So I'm just going to go a little to chair history, and then I'm going to pull us back out to the present day. So the reason why I don't know that much about what happens to chairs pre-1850s is because industrial design didn't really exist pre-1850s, and many people would argue that it didn't really exist as a profession until like pre-early 1900s. Industrial design, before that, people were craftspeople, right? They had guilds. Like, if you wanted a piece of furniture, right? Like, let's say you wanted a new dining table set, you would go down to the cabinet maker, and you would say, "Hey, I want a new dining set." And he would say, "Great, pay me a lot of money, because this is going to take me a lot of time, and come back in 6 to 8 months, and I'll have your pieces then." If you're wealthy and you're paying for really fine ornate furniture, this might take 2 to 3 years. Come back then. And so you would do that, and then you would arrive with your horse and buggy, and you load the furniture into your car. Or sorry, your car.
Well, I mean, if you had a car back then, that would be, pretty amazing.
That would be pretty amazing. And you would take it back to your home. And so furniture was really expensive. This is why your grandmother's rocking chair would be passed down for generations, right? Like, this was, once you had these pieces, you wanted to keep them forever. Poor people generally didn't have a lot of furniture. What they did have was either handmade themselves or handed down from them, or maybe they were able to scrap it from somewhere. Middle class, it's when you started getting those nice rooms, like those, this is what I'm talking, like 1800s, where like you can't sit down on anything unless it's nice company. There was a reason for that, because that furniture would be really hard to replace. And of course, wealthy people were, and that's the furniture we tend to have like in museums and such, were paid craftsmen exorbitant amounts of money to get their chairs back, to get these lovely pieces. So where it turns is this chair called, it's called, so this chair is called the number 14 chair. There was technically
Okay.
14 chairs made before the number 14 chair, but the number 14 chair is a chair you have sat in before. I would put lots of money on the table that you, Matt, and anyone listening to this has sat in this chair before. It is called the cafe chair. It was designed by Michael Toney in the late 1800s. This chair was a chair that was made with steam bending. I don't know if you know what steam bending is, but it's when you take long pieces of wood, you stick them into a box with a lot of steam, you take it out, they're nice and bendy, you can put it into a mold, and it'll generally keep their shape afterwards. Fantastic. So what's cool about this is he was the first person to mass produce chairs. Not only that, the number 14 chair could be mass produced in a factory, which in the 1860s, there are kind of factories popping up, but we're not like full swing industrial revolution yet. Someone can correct me on that. My expertise is in chairs, not in the industrial revolution. And this chair could be flat packed. So he did IKEA before IKEA could do IKEA. And so these chairs were very cheap. And so Michael Toney was in France. These chairs are made with cane. They're like kind of like swirly. I don't know if you have a computer near you right now, Matt, if you want to take a look at these, but I can describe one real quick. So these are wooden chairs with a cane seat, and they have like wooden legs and a wooden back, but it's all made of cane. It's not solid wood because these are all steam vent chairs. Yeah, you've seen this chair before, right? Yeah, so this chair sold 50 million chairs in the next 50 years, which for that time period is a lot of fucking furniture.
That's so many.
Yes. And I like to call this chair like the most French chair imaginable, because it was in all the French cafes, you know, instead of these cafes having to go and either thrift furniture, I don't, or having to like go and get it made, they're here. Michael Toney can mass produce pieces for them way cheaper. It was first shown at the 1867 World Exposition in Paris, and it got a gold medal, the number 14 chairs. So big deal. So
Truly, truly. Jack, I'm so sorry. We're just about out of time.
time. Great. So why don't I wrap up? So what I'm trying to say here though is after that, we went from craftspeople to designers. Designers would come up with a design, it would go into production, it could be made a lot of them for very cheaply. That's really interesting, because the same thing right now is happening with AI art, where an artist can decide a style, put it into a machine literally, and then we can output as much of that style as we want. And yeah, the shift from craftspeople to designers was a very big one in the world. And I'm very curious to see what happens with AI art and how artists handled it in the future.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
Jack, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. I feel
Of
like
course.
I've learned so much. If people wanted to learn more about this topic or more about you, where would you recommend that they go?
I feel like if you're someone who loves chairs, you probably already know about 99% Invisible, fantastic podcast. They do have actually a piece on the Navy chair. I'd recommend giving that a listen if you want to know a thing or two about design history, specifically with that piece. As for me, yeah, I perform in and around Boston. I am right now, I run something called AV Comedy Club. It is a free open mic in Kendall Square in Boston, actually technically Cambridge, Massachusetts. And you can look that up on Eventbrite. Grab a ticket, show up. I talk about chairs about half the time, and that is the most reliable way to get chair comedy facts from me as of March 2024.
Fantastic.
Something about me is I love creating just cool experiences for comedians and audiences alike. So this isn't my idea. Someone did a version of this in Boston before. Their person's name is Angela Sawyer. She's wonderful, but I've taken the idea and adjusted a little bit. But I have an open mic concept coming up that called Seinfelding, where comedians will get up. I will have a soundboard with slap bass noises, and there's a brick wall. And I think we could see where this is going. You get to pretend to be Jerry Seinfeld for 5 minutes, and it's going to be wonderful and amazing. And then, depending on how it goes, I hope to develop a show based on it. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. That's going to be April 1st in Kendall Square at the Cambridge Foundry. And I think it's going to be a ridiculously good time.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. This has been an absolute blast.
Great. Yes. Thank you so much, Matt. You got me thinking about Paleolithic chairs. So thank you for that.
I do what I can when I can. My name is Matt Storrs, and this has been Matt Splaining. Hey, everybody. Before we go today, I wanted to let you know that I have a new solo show, No Bones About It, about my lifelong love of dinosaurs, premiering at the New York City Fringe in April, April 7th, 8th, 17th, and 20th. Both in-person and streaming tickets are available on the Frigid website, frigid.nyc. I hope that you'll be able to check out this wonderful show that includes art from some of my best friends who have been so kind to provide artwork of their favorite fat dinosaurs. You can find out more information on any of my social profiles at MTStorrs, MTStorrs. And I hope that you'll get a chance to see this absolutely delightful show that I have been able to put together. For more information about other shows and other things that I'm up to, feel free to check out my Substack, respectfully yours, Matthew Storrs, or check out my Linktree. All of these items are linked in the description of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. I love you.